All right, it's Wednesday. It is May 20th, and we had a full slate of games yesterday, so let's discuss. Adam Azer with Scott White and Chris Towers. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Adam.
And Chris, let's go to you with a movie review of Pitch Perfect 2.
It's lovely. It's a great time at the theater. If you enjoyed the first one, which everybody should have.
Everybody should have.
I liked it.
It's just a delightful movie.
It's American classic. You know, Jeff Tobin and I were talking about Pitch Perfect the other day. I was talking about how good of a movie it is, and he was talking about how bad of a movie it is. And the strange part about the conversation was he compared it to Frozen. And I'm not sure its intended audience is the same. He tried to convince me Pitch Perfect was intended for children.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah, there's some pretty adult stuff in there.
There are adult themes. It would get a TVMA if they aired it on.
I mean, it's probably intended for like high schoolers. I could buy that argument. I don't know if you get to a certain age and, you know, high schoolers and 6 year olds, they're all kids.
I think that movie's intended for everyone.
Well,
yeah, I agree. I don't. Well, if anyone, maybe except children,
yeah,
I think children of the. Has Tobin actually ever seen Pitch Perfect? We have to ask him because that
Aunt
is
not exactly the most child friendly character. Of all.
No, she's not. That he is way off base there. I've got another candidate for the most underowned player in fantasy. Yesterday I said AJ Ramos. Today I will suggest Jung Ho Kang, 36% owned, eligible at short and third, and batting .320, and what in 75 at bats. What do you think, Jung Ho Kang, most underowned, or one of the most?
You're just all over the place with these ownership percentages here.
Because, why? What do you mean?
Ramos is what, 50%, or he was yesterday?
Yeah, 50.
And Kang is
36 or 35.
36.
Okay, sorry. I don't know, Adam. You know. Do you want him, or do you want Brad Miller, who's red hot all of a sudden? Do you
that's not a new thing. I mean, he's been red hot before, and we've been duped.
Right, but Gong's not playing every day, and he hasn't been that productive.
Kind of
he's
is now.
Fine.
He's only gotten, it looks like, 4 days out of the starting lineup since the start of May.
Yeah. I mean, it's trending the right direction. I think he's going to overtake Jordy Mercer at some point, but
it looks like it's happened.
What's that?
It kind of looks like it's happened. That's why I'm suggesting it.
Well, I don't know. I guess I just want to see him do more because we don't really know what his upside is here. Mm-hmm. We obviously know what he did in Korea.
Yeah, this
was spectacular.
This was more of a suggestion rather than a proclamation. In fact, I think we could go back to the bullpen and maybe say that Enrique Burgos might be the most underowned player. He's about 10% owned. Scott, you just wrote about Burgos, who got his second save in 2 days.
Yeah, and I wrote about him yesterday when I thought that the save was really just a one-day thing. I looked him up, seeing his name in the box score with a save, and I was like, wow, this guy's a crazy strikeout rate. Maybe there's an opportunity here if the Diamondbacks decide to look for a long-term solution instead of just falling back on Ziegler. Now, I still don't know him getting the save last night for a second straight day how much it means, because Ziegler worked two innings the previous day. Maybe they just thought Ziegler needed a day off. Burgos, even though he struck out two last night, he allowed two base runners in an inning, and he does walk a bunch of guys, so I'm not sure it's going to work out. But I would agree with you that 10%, I mean, I picked him up in two roto leagues where there's no saves on the waiver wire, and I only have two closers.
Yeah.
So him or Ziegler?
I would still go Ziegler right now, but it's almost a coin flip at this point, I feel like.
Did you read the quote that Chip Hill had about Burgos after the game?
I did not.
All right, let me pull that up because I'm going to read it again, make sure I don't misinterpret it. I was kind of rushing. But it seemed like they were considering, like, going with Burgos as the closer. We'll get back to that in a second. Meanwhile, did the injury bug just destroy baseball yesterday? What a bad day.
Oh, yeah.
Here's who went on the DL. Jason Wirth went on the DL. Wilmer Defoe, an infielder, was called up. Or Willem Defoe, as Scott likes to call him. Victor Martinez is on the DL. Jacoby Ellsbury went on the DL with a sprained knee. Slade Heathcott will be called up, but I would guess Chris Young will be getting more at-bats. Will Myers went on the DL with wrist inflammation. Now, he missed 70 games with a similar injury last year. I'll take the under, but this isn't good.
Well, last year it was a fracture, right?
I don't know. Let me. I'll look that up. Bud Black compared it to last year's injury, so that's which.
Okay.
A lot of people blame the bad season on the injury, so I don't know. Yeah, I find this to be a really discouraging development, but let me check and see if he fractured last year.
Corey Dickerson's on the DL, and Drew Pomeranz could go on the DL. So with all these DL moves, oh, and Coco Crisp hurt his neck, which makes Billy Burns more interesting, because Burns came in and stole a base, was caught stealing, but he tried to steal two. He went 2 for 3 at Houston with a strikeout. You know, I think Michael Taylor comes into the equation. Is there anyone else that you guys want to, maybe Drew Stubbs, want to pick up in shallower or deeper formats?
Michael Taylor is probably my favorite. I feel like he deserves, on most team, on just about any other team, he'd have an everyday job. And while, you know, plate discipline's not great, probably not going to hit for a high batting average, the power speed combo and roto, it makes him somebody you have to get in your lineup.
Okay.
By the way, Will Myers did have a stress fracture last year. So.
Yeah, and it's tendonitis this year, so it's different, but it could be related. But hopefully it's not nearly as serious as last season.
Yeah, I hope so. More injury stuff real quick here. With Drew Pomeranz perhaps going on the DL, we'll know more today. Pablo Sandoval left after being hit by a pitch on the knee. There's no fracture. Let's hope he's in the lineup today. The Red Sox could have a big day. Hanley Ramirez was removed from last night's game. He jammed his leg while sliding into second base, but they said no big deal, or at least seemed to hint that. Rusne Castillo could be close to a promotion. And I wanted to know what your expectations were for Anthony Rendon, because I was just randomly thinking about this. I just randomly think about Anthony Rendon sometimes. Chris Davis, Jason Kipnis came back from an oblique injury last year, and they were bad. And now, after the knee injury, now it's an oblique that he's dealing with. Are you worried that when Rendon comes back, he won't be Rendon? Well, it'll be Rendon. I don't anticipate him being a new person.
Well, I didn't worry about it until now, Adam.
It's a good point, isn't it?
It's something to consider. I feel like the long history of players coming back from oblique injuries, more often than not, they're fine once they do get back. I don't know if Kipnis is issue, and who else did you mention?
Chris Davis.
If their issues last year were rushing back and maybe they were never completely healthy, may have been some of that going on. And we don't know that that won't be the case with Rendon, because I'm sure both he and the Nationals are chomping at the bit at this point. But if I still have him as my second-ranked second baseman rest of season, so you traded him straight up for Kluber.
Yeah.
A couple
But
weeks
yesterday,
ago.
Yesterday, and this is probably the real reason why I was thinking about Rendon, I was offered Rendon for Matt Kemp in a 5-outfielder league.
Yeah.
I think I would usually do it. I'm not going to in this case because of the way my roster is. I'm just loaded at second and third, not so much at outfield. But I think I would probably do that, even though, do you guys feel like Kemp is going to scorch the earth at some point? He's been cold for a long time now.
Scorch the earth.
Chris, jump in there.
Sure.
We haven't heard much from Chris today, other than pitch perfect.
That's really, like, do I need to talk about anything? I think Matt Kemp at some point will get hot, yeah, but I think it's also at the point in his career where we can't expect prolonged dominance. You know, sustained levels of dominance like he used to be. Last season, it was really just half the season.
Well, it was 4 months, and that's an extended stretch of dominance. 4 months where he had a 300 batting average and 900 OPS. I'm a little underwhelmed by his performance so far, and I'm not sure about this. I feel like there's been some talk about him maybe not being completely healthy. I'm going to check on that since I put it out there now.
Kemp said, I can still run, but I can't run like I used to run. I got to do a lot more maintenance, making sure my body is right. When I was younger, I could just get out of bed, blah, blah, blah. So he's got these, you know, veteran ankles.
Yeah, that almost sounds to me, and you know, a lot of reading between the lines here, I'll admit, but that almost sounds to me like there's a problem he doesn't want to express head on. Like he's kind of talking around a problem that's going on. And obviously, given his injury history, you always worry about him not being quite right. So that is a little bit of a concern for me, but it's about the same level as my concern for Rendon when he gets back, which is to say, not that high.
All right, everybody. Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
I think Rendon probably has, even if you have a similar level of concern, I'd rather have Rendon just because the upside's higher.
Right.
Yeah, no, I typically would as well. I want to remind everyone to watch Daily Fantasy Live on CBSSports.com at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Daily Fantasy Live. Ryan Bass, Heath Cummings, Alan Scott, they help you set your lineup for your FanDuel leagues. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more DFS later on in today's show. It is going to be a shorter show, as usual, on Wednesdays. So I don't think we'll have time for emails, but keep sending them at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Coming up, Gio Gonzalez, Liriano, Anibal Sanchez, they were pretty horrible yesterday. We got a lot of bullpen news, got some guys in deep leagues that you might want to consider. We'll talk Trevor Bauer, Jimmy Paredes has reached base in 20 straight games, and blah, blah, blah. Chris, the nerds are taking over. This morning, I found myself on, oh man, shame to admit this, baseballsavants.nerd.
Oh.
I was
one of us.
Yeah.
One of us.
I was looking for some data that I actually couldn't find. So I'm going to ask you if you can find it, and I don't even know if it exists, but can you find batted ball velocity against Michael Wacha?
Sure.
And I was going to give this to you as a trivia question, but now I won't because I've already given away the answer. But I'm going to give you some stats and tell me if this player, if his profile strikes you as a buy low, or a sell high, excuse me, a major sell high candidate, and it's Michael Wacha, spoiler alert. 2.13 ERA, 3.77 FIP, 4.12 XFIP, 85% strand rate, and a 2.31 BABIP.
Yeah. If you took the name away, and it wasn't the name of a guy who's young, who we expected to break out, who we thought could make a jump up from a 3.2 ERA that he posted last season to an ERA in the twos. I think if you took all that away and it was just that context, I think absolutely you'd say he's a sell high.
Adam, you could have summed up all those numbers by just saying he's not striking out as many guys as we'd expect.
I know, but you know, the thing is I've watched him last three starts and not enough, not as much as I'd like, but every time I watch him, I just feel like he's getting lucky. But then he only gave up four hits yesterday. So I watched him yesterday in the first inning when he stranded two, gave up a pretty hard hit fly ball to center field that was caught. It wasn't fairly deep. It wasn't that deep or anything. But, you know, the few starts ago against the Pirates, he ended up giving up like two earned runs, but it was just not a good start. And I am kind of worried about Michael Wacha. It's not just that he's not striking people out. It's that I feel like there's hard hit balls. That's why I wanted, our nerd Chris Towers to look it up.
But the lack of strikeouts is the main thing contributing to the high BABIP and the high FIP and XFIP. The walk rate's fine. The home run rate is fine. It's really just strikeouts. And I think it's, yeah, I'm a little baffled by Wacha too, because I do think he's a good pitcher, but at some point, if he doesn't get the strikeout rate turned around, I do think it'll come back to bite him. We saw a pretty big drop in strikeout rate last year with him. I know Al was worried about Sonny Gray coming into this season for the same reason, the drop in strikeout rate from his rookie to sophomore seasons. And yet, for some reason, he doesn't seem worried about Michael Wacha, which I don't entirely understand. But in a way, it makes me reluctant to write off Wacha, too.
Same here.
Yeah.
Al loves him. I'm amming Al right now. I said, worried about Wacha at all? Let's see what he says.
Yeah.
Would you guys look to sell high on Michael Wacha? I mean, look, he's 6-0 right now with like a 2.13 ERA. So I think you could sell high on him just for that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
If somebody values him like a starting pitcher 1 or 2 even, I think I would definitely sell high on him.
He's only my 30th ranked starting pitcher. I still have Tyson Ross ahead of him, Julio Teheran, Alex Wood. I don't think you'd necessarily have to do a sell high buy low combo like that. You could probably trade Waka straight up for Colin McHugh. Well, not probably, but there's a chance you could do that.
You would do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Alright, stat of the day. Kansas City shut out consecutive opponents for the first time in 23 years. And we'll talk about Yordan Ventura now, who had a very good start. 7 innings, no runs on 4 hits, no walks, 6 strikeouts. Thoughts on Yordan Ventura?
That's a little more like it. I don't know. My opinion really hasn't changed on him this year through all the ups and downs. I think he's a high upside pitcher who stage he's at in his career probably going to perform like a number 3 or 4 mixed league option.
And Al says his worryometer on Michael Waka is a 2. He's not worried. I'm looking forward to having this discussion with him tomorrow.
I think, yeah, we can discuss it tomorrow. He's traded strikeouts for ground balls, and that's kind of the same thing that Ventura is doing. The weird thing about Ventura is at no point in his major league career has he ever struck out as many batters as we think he should, mm-hmm. based on the kind of stuff he has.
He's still very early in his career.
Sure, yeah. We're only 245 innings in, but yeah. it's trending in the wrong direction this season, and it's really strange for someone with the kind of electric stuff that he has to not strike guys out. But if he's getting ground balls with the defense that they have behind him, I think it can work. It just limits his upside a bit.
FanDuel. We'll talk about FanDuel a little bit later, but FanDuel hosts one-day fantasy contests. And if you want to get your deposit matched dollar for dollar up to $200, you know what to do. Go to FanDuel.com, sign up, use our offer code CBS. So that's FanDuel.com. Sign up today, go play, and have fun. I'm in a FanDuel funk last few days, but I'm going to break it tonight. A lot of crappy pitchers again tonight. I'm going to pick on them.
Adam, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Waka not giving up particularly hard batted ball velocity. He's 117th amongst pitchers with at least 500 pitches. You know who's number one, though?
Who?
Yordan Ventura.
Oh, wow.
Giving up 92.5 average batted ball velocity. That is number one, which is a little surprising.
Well, that kind of changes my perception a little bit of Waka. But whatever. Email of the day from Cam in New Zealand. Dear Michael, Jim, and Dwight, at the time I'm writing you, Justin Upton is hitting .293 with 10 home runs, 27 RBI, and 8 steals. Are we looking at a 30-30 guy as an owner? What should I expect rest of season from Justin Upton? And we got a little bit of feedback about not putting Upton in our first two rounds when we drafted yesterday. Chris, what do you expect from Upton rest of season?
You know, I think he's someone who's young enough. And we've seen him reach an elite level of production before.
Yep.
Not in the last couple of years. He's been a little hit or miss, but 2011, 31 home runs, 21 stolen bases. He hit .289. And his strikeout rate is down a little bit from last year. I think he can hit another level. He's only 27. He's been around forever, but he's only 27.
Yeah. And honestly, the steals are a game changer for me because it looked like he was getting to that point in his career where he wasn't going to do that anymore. He didn't even have double-digit steals his 2 years in Atlanta.
In 2013 and 2014 each. He has 8 already.
And it's a perfect day for 8. So he's been a 2020 player twice in his career. I do think, he's well on pace for a 30-30 season. I mean, he could slow down, obviously. I expect him to slow down to some degree, but I'm kind of counting on a 30-30 season at this point.
A 30-30 seems like a lot.
Wow.
That's asking a whole lot, but 2020 seems maybe 30-20.
Hey, Scott, more home runs, Chris Bryant or Justin Upton this year?
Like from this point on?
I don't know. Scott thinks everyone's going to hit 30 home runs.
I'll Upton. I got to say Upton. Because you guys were acting like 31 was such an off-the-wall call for Brian. And obviously I'm expecting Upton to hit more than 31 at this point. He already has 10.
Okay, tweet of the day is from Mighty Casey. For tomorrow's podcast, can you please incorporate Lance McCullers name into Cyndi Lauper's True Colors. Am I right? I like this game. We're getting some good suggestions for name incorporation into songs. I'll try to naturally incorporate Lance McCullers' name into that. All right, let's get to yesterday's stuff here. The worryometer. Gio Gonzalez is a 4.94 ERA. Gave up 6 runs yesterday. Just seems to have these terrible starts and these great ones. Righties are batting 3.10 against Gio, which is unusual. Francisco Liriano got roughed up yesterday. 7 runs in 2 innings. And Anibal Sanchez, now he's got a 5.60 ERA. He has 4 starts this year, Sanchez, allowing 5 earned runs or more. So let's go worryometer 0 to 10. Based on preseason expectations, how worried are you about Gio Gonzalez? 10, extremely worried. 0, not worried at all.
Maybe like a 7. I know his overall numbers were down last year, but after he came off the DL for, I think it was a shoulder injury in May, he was the same Gio as always. So this inconsistency to start the year is, I'm not really sure where it's coming from.
Yeah, it's a 7. 5.
Oh, I mean, but considering what you said, Scott, a 7's pretty high.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, 5 is, 5, well.
5 is an average amount of worry on the worryometer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Scott, you've got him 33rd, yeah. Gio Gonzalez. Do you plan on moving him down?
Well, let me see who's behind him. Lance Lynn, okay. Shelby Miller, okay. Anibal Sanchez. I might move him down a couple spots.
All right. All right, how about
you're
going
to move him down below Anibal Sanchez?
There, to me, two I'm much of the most more baffling worried. Pitchers right
I'm
now.
I'm much more worried about Anibal Sanchez.
Oh, let's do Anibal Sanchez worryometer then, Chris.
I'm a 7 at least on him. His ground ball rate has collapsed. You know, he was never a huge ground ball pitcher, but he's down to 35% so far. He's giving up a ton of fly balls and a ton of line drives. He's not the elite strikeout guy he was 2 years ago.
He's had some really big strikeout games this year. That's kind of what makes him so baffling is he's been, he might be the most Jekyll and Hyde pitcher so far this year. It's either like 7 innings and 9 Ks or what happened yesterday.
I think the one thing though that I brought up last time about Sanchez is that all of his good starts have come against one team.
No, that's not true.
No, is that
Alan
the
and I
Twins.
Looked at that afterward. He had a good start against the Royals, a good start against the Yankees, and 3 good starts against
He did not have that good of a start against the Yankees. He walked like 5 guys in that game.
Well, all his other numbers were good. He had 8 strikeouts in 6 innings, didn't he?
I'll look it up right now.
I mean, just because the walks were aberrational doesn't mean you discount the whole start.
Okay, keep talking and I will look it up.
The one thing I do want to look up is, according to PitchFX, he's throwing a splitter more than a changeup this season, and I want to see if that's something that has been true in the past, and if the different movement on the two pitches is just something that PitchFX is picking up in a small sample size, or if he's actually throwing a different pitch. Because I haven't seen anything that he's throwing it with a different grip or anything, and I don't know if that's a potential explanation for why he's been getting fewer ground balls.
Here's my honest take on Anibal Sanchez.
Okay, good. Give us your honest take. I was worried this whole time you were lying.
Yeah.
To our faces about Anibal Sanchez.
I think if he had really gone wrong here, we wouldn't see the great starts in between the terrible ones. Like if he just wasn't getting strikeouts anymore, if he was getting beat up every time or most every time. Like, I noticed the fly ball rate is way up, but I'm more interested in why it's up than just the fact that it's up. And I think it's probably based on how good he's looked at times, it's probably something minor that he can correct. I'm actually less worried about him than Gio because Gio has the elephant in the room being the high walk rate, which is something he's never going to overcome.
And here's my honest take on Anibal Sanchez. He's had an ERA under 3.43 twice in his career. So I think he's overrated to begin with. Not this bad, but, yeah, the Twins, 3 pretty good starts against the Twins. Yeah, a good start against the Yankees.
Decent start against the Royals,
7 1/3, 3 runs, 4 strikeouts. I mean, that's fine against the Royals. Then terrible against Milwaukee, terrible against Kansas City, terrible against the White Sox, terrible against Pittsburgh. But yeah, those three good starts against the Twins are the only, probably the only reason why his ERA isn't around 9 right now. And, okay. That's Anibal Sanchez. So he's top 40 for you, Scott. How about you, Chris?
Well, I don't have an official ranking, but
in your mind,
I would keep Gio above him in my hypothetical fictitious rankings.
And is anybody worried about Francisco Liriano?
Not really. Yeah. I think he is what he is.
Bullpen. Interesting stuff in the bullpen. We talked about Enrique Burgos, but here's the quote from Chip Hale. When you're throwing 98 with a really snapdragon-type slider, it's very difficult to dig in there as a hitter because you don't know where the ball is going to go. So every now and again, he does miss the zone and walks a guy. That's the way it goes, and we have to live with it. We live with the good, the strikeouts, and we have to live with the bad, sometimes the walks. And we know over time that will improve.
A snapdragon's a type of flower, right? Is that the only thing? Is there another type of snapdragon that I'm missing here?
Yeah, there's a curveball.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know a snapdragon was a flower.
Yeah, it's a type of flower.
Man.
Come on.
Flowersavant.com, everybody.
I guess you're more of a baseball expert than a horticultural expert, but I'm a Renaissance man.
Oh, that's a very pretty flower, Chris. I just Google imaged it.
Thank you.
That's good
stuff.
Came
up with it myself.
Yeah, well done. Neftali Feliz pitched in a non-save situation and walked two and gave up a hit in 4 outs, inning in a third. Scoreless.
That was a close game though. It might not have been a situation where he was like out of the closer's role as much as it was just, you know, they were in a close game late.
Well, do you think Steve Tolleson needs to be picked up?
I don't think Feliz is very good at this point.
Yeah, and obviously there's the league formats where anyone with a shot at saves are owned. I mean, those formats, you need to pick them up. If Tolleson were to overtake Feliz, which is not assured by any stretch, I don't know that they would get that many opportunities as the Rangers closer. It's just a bad situation for closers.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would certainly pick up AJ Ramos over him. I'd pick up Tolleson over either the Diamondbacks guys right now and over John Axford, but that's about it.
Craig Kimbrel gave up another home run. Worryometer.
Zero.
Zero.
Can I go negative?
Andrew Miller gave up a walk-off home run to Ryan Zimmerman. Rough sports night for your friendly fantasy baseball podcast host here. After the Knicks future was tossed aside by the lottery. The Yankees blew a 6-2 lead. It was a bad sports night. And I completely ruined the Yankees season by jinxing them last week by raving about how good they were. And now they're bad again. And Ellsberg's on the DL. Great. Luke Gregerson! He struggled against Oakland. He gave up 2 runs on 2 hits with 2 walks in 2/3 of an inning.
That was a lot of twos.
Yeah, it was. And Nishek got the save. And Gregerson's not going to be available today. They're going to kind of give him a little bit of a breather and get him back out there.
I think this is something to watch with Nishek, who I thought was the better pitcher coming in. I was a little surprised they named Gregerson the closer. But last 7 outings, Gregerson has allowed 2 earned runs in 3 of them. So he's having the kind of consistency issues that a lot of times get otherwise good relievers moved out of a closer role, especially when there's an option like Nishek to replace him.
Nishek, I think, has no walks and 15 strikeouts this year. By the way, I'm going to look it up. What do you guys think is higher, Neftali Feliz's whip or Michael Wacha's ERA?
I'm going to go Wacha's ERA.
Probably just barely, though, right?
Let's see. Okay, it's not as high as I thought. It's 1.78. Whip for Feliz. So
it is. It's higher than a few pitchers, though.
Probably
it's higher than Shelby Miller's ERA.
Yeah, yeah. He had a whip under 1 last year. I don't really know what's going on with him, but he's pitching like garbage.
It was a very small sample size last season, right?
Yeah. It was more than this year, but yes, 30 games, 31 2/3 innings.
Yeah, I just. Not he's. Felice has never, he's another guy that for all his velocity and all his apparent stuff, his strikeout rates have always been pretty middling, and they haven't gotten any better this season.
Cody Allen has turned it around. Last four appearances, no hits, no runs, no walks, six strikeouts. And Jake McGee pitched the eighth yesterday. Brad Boxberger pitched the ninth and got the save at Atlanta. I got three names for deeper leagues. Just tell me if you're interested at all in them. In shallower format or in deep formats, whatever. They're owned in 5% of leagues or less. Todd Cunningham, Atlanta outfielder, is 9 for 15. Max Muncy, 8 for 28 with two home runs. He's an Oakland first baseman that's going to platoon with Mark Canna. And Chris Coughlin hit two home runs yesterday. He's 5% owned.
Cunningham is the one who, even like in a deep NL-only league, I would say, whatever. Smoke and mirrors here. Just no power, speed, on base ability. Just nothing to get excited about. The other two they're strictly deep league options. They're not everyday players, and I don't think they have particularly high ceilings, but they at least bring something to the table. Muncy, on base guy with some pop, and Coughlin, I guess, is the same thing.
He's kind of become an all or nothing power hitter this season, which is really, really strange.
But he was like,
he was decent all around last year.
Last year he showed I thought he was on the verge of playing his way out of the league, and then last year he came back with a very productive season on a part-time basis. I don't know that he's that good, but I think he's NL-only good.
Well, we've barely scratched the surface from Tuesday's game, so what stood out to you guys on Tuesday?
Okay. Always catch me off guard with this question, even though you ask it every day.
And you've got your yellow paper out. Scott still writes his notes. Doesn't use a computer.
Well, actually, can you see this?
Hey, buddy? That's your. I thought those were my notes.
But I also have this.
Yes.
A little double dipping, computer and by hand. You know, let's talk a little about Aaron Harang, because he's perplexing in his own way. Coors Field. I was a little reluctant on the Daily Fantasy Live to, you know, say stack the Rockies against him at Coors Field, even though logically speaking it made sense. I feel like Harang's defied logic for so long now. We can't really rely on logic with him. He's a fly ball pitcher who didn't have a high home run rate last year, has a ridiculously low run rate this year, even though he's playing in one of the most home run friendly stadiums. I'm not even talking about Coors Field. I'm talking about where the Phillies play his home games.
He's become even more of a home run hitter this season, too.
Fly ball.
Or a fly ball pitcher.
They must not be very long fly balls. I know. His walk rate's like elite now. It was never bad, but he's taken a step forward with that this year, which is, I think, part of what's contributing to his early success here. And I still don't feel great about him, but I feel like at this point you just have to acknowledge he's a viable mixed league option.
He's 87% owned.
Which is too high, probably. Yeah.
Would you drop him to take a shot on a Mike Wright or a Lance McCullers?
Well, I don't even know that. I mean, if you're talking about 85% owned, there's probably guys much higher end than those two that I'd drop Harang for. I mean, 87% is the same rate as Phil Hughes and Carlos Martinez.
Okay, would you drop Aaron Harang to take a shot on, where in the world is Hector Santiago?
No, you're still aiming too low, I think.
I'm sorry.
I would rather have Harang than all three of those guys.
I wanted to sing a name. Oh, you would rather have Harang than Santiago?
Yes.
How about you, Chris? Because he's a standout from yesterday as well. He's pitching pretty well.
I think I'd rather have Santiago. I think there's at least some upside there. I know we've seen Chris Young do this as an older fly ball pitcher who gets results. It's still really hard for me to buy in. It goes against everything that I believe.
I mean, Young's done it in favorable pitchers' parks, which is a big distinction there.
I didn't get any love for the Hector Santiago, Carmen Sandiego thing.
I chuckled.
Scott was pissed off. He's like, how dare you interrupt this Aaron Harang analysis?
I'm just used to your antics, Adam. It's like,
your antics are novel to me, Adam.
Yeah, I came up with that on the spot, people.
You know, that really is. I was actually thinking about this the other day when I was driving in the car, not even because that's what I randomly think about while you're thinking about Anthony Rendon. That's really like an awesome theme song for like
an
early 90s public broadcasting show.
Rockapella.
Rockapella, indeed. Steal their soul in South Korea,
That's a great line. Okay, Gumshoes, any other standouts from Tuesday?
The Mariners bullpen continues to be a disaster. Fernando Rodney has struggled this season, but any of the guys who might have a chance to step up in his place haven't really shown anything. And I thought Taiwan Walker was starting to turn it around. He had 10 walks in his first three starts, only five in his last four before tonight when he walked four, or last night when he walked four and only had three strikeouts. Gave up four runs in 3 2/3 innings. I don't know if it's gonna happen for him this season.
Are you done? 75% owned. Are we done with Walker?
If I didn't need the roster spot, if I could afford to hang on to him, I would. But I'm not saying drop him for sure.
All right, here's the ultimate test for Chris.
I'd rather have him than Harang.
And that's not the ultimate test. The ultimate test. Because, you know, I can understand the skepticism about Harang. I get it, but it's just hard for me to share it at this point. Taiwan Walker or Ubaldo Jimenez?
I'd still rather have Walker.
Your principles. You and your principles are going to lead you right to last place.
I don't think Ubaldo Jimenez, if I'm hurtling headlong toward last place, I don't think Ubaldo Jimenez is the air brake that's going to stop me from crashing into the mountain.
Maybe, you know, maybe.
I'd be very surprised.
You know, Adam, I want to bring up something you referred to earlier, if I may.
Is it Jimmy Paredes?
No.
Okay.
That we just kind of sped by.
Okay.
Because it's like some of the biggest news of the year, I think.
Oh, crap. What did I miss?
You said it. But we just kind of sped past it. Rusne Castillo. The Red Sox are it sounds like he's coming up as soon as he's done with his paternity leave, which in the baseball world only lasts a couple days. He's a potential game changer who's available in 28% of leagues. A lot of people got impatient waiting for him, I guess, because he was universally drafted. I know Al Heath and I all picked him to win AL Rookie of the Year at the start of the year, even knowing he was going to begin the year in the minors, because when he came up, he was going to be that good. He's the power speed combo of Michael Taylor, but probably with a high on base percentage and batting average as well.
Wonderful. Trevor Bauer had another good start. All right, Scott, you like Trevor Bauer. He does have a 1.245 whip, so 1.25 whip, which is a little high. But he's only had two bad starts, maybe three, but really two bad ones.
The control's still an issue. It's not a debilitating issue right now, but
it's like Gio Gonzalez.
4/9 with a high fly ball rate. That's one thing, is Gio Gonzalez gets ground balls.
Well, since the first two starts of the season, Bauer hasn't had more than three walks at a game. He had 4 and 5 in the first two. So
I mean,
it was a shaky start.
Three walks isn't exactly a
barometer. He's not a great control pitcher. But he's not, like, I don't think that's a debilitating issue for a pitcher with his bat missing ability. I mean,
yeah, I just think fly ball pitcher, they don't have a great defense, especially not in the outfield. I think it could blow up really quickly with the amount of base runners he puts on. He does miss a lot of bats, you're right, and he's going to induce some weak contact. As a result of that, his hard hit rate is pretty low, but I just feel like we're seeing him. I think there's some luck involved right now.
Well, okay.
And I think he's probably more of a 4 ERA pitcher.
Okay. That seems on the high side to me. But
he's
a lot of times.
3 right now. It's not a huge jump. It's a couple extra home runs over the course of 8 starts. And I just think he's got a 5.3 home run to fly ball ratio. That's really low for someone that throws hard.
Let's try putting it into context here, because a lot of times, you know, I found this to happen with Al a lot. One of us will take one of us will be putting a positive spin on it, one of us will be putting on the negative spin, and then when it comes down to actual business, we value him about the same way.
Yeah.
So let's see where I have him. I'm 40th around guys like Cashner, Jimmy Nelson.
Based on
Ian
his
Kennedy.
Upside, that sounds fine, but it doesn't, it seems like a thing where his best case scenario is a lot higher than that. And I think it's fine to settle around 40, but I think his most likely scenario is lower.
And this is Trevor Bauer we're talking about here. Is anybody buying into Jimmy Paredes?
He keeps doing it.
Yeah. That's like the only reason at this point. It just like you sound like an idiot just dismissing him after 6 weeks of it, you know?
And it's starting to feel a lot like last season when it was just like, are we buying into Steve Pierce? No way. He can't keep this up. And then it.
Yeah. Or Josh happening. Harrison's the one
yeah.
I keep. Like, honestly, Paredes and Josh Harrison, there was probably a solid 3-year stretch when you said one of their names and I would think you were talking about the other guy. So it's just so bizarre to me that Paredes has then followed up this out of nowhere breakout for Harrison with one of his own.
And who do you like better?
Right now?
Harrison.
Yeah, still Harrison, but it's...
Especially now that he's starting to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like the fact that Paredes is batting second in that order, though. You know, you get good hitters behind you, you get Manny Machado in front of you, he's a base stealer now. It's a good spot for him. And he's 73% owned, and Ruisne Castillo is 72% owned. So are you even a question of who you'd rather have?
Oh, no, I'd rather have Ruisne.
Yeah. Okay.
Injuries, news, and notes. We mentioned it yesterday, but the Cubs traded Wellington Castillo to Seattle for Yoervis Medina. Hyunjin Ryu is going to have shoulder surgery, might be out for the year. Brandon Beachy will begin a rehab assignment soon. So that's another Tommy John guy you can put on your radar. Danny Santana led off from Minnesota yesterday. Carlos Santana won't be back for a couple of days. Masahiro Tanaka should make a rehab start Thursday. Devin Mesoraco did some catching drills yesterday. We still don't know what's going to happen there. Drew Smyly actually hopes to return at some point this season. He's going to rest and rehab the torn labrum. Best case scenario likely would be August, according to the Tampa Bay Times for Smyly. Greg Holland did not get the save. Wade Davis did. Holland had a stiff neck. Yan Gomes could be back on Sunday. Francisco Cervelli left for precautionary reasons. Oswaldo Arcia could begin a rehab assignment by the end of the week. Charlie Morton may be back soon for Pittsburgh. He's definitely going to be in the rotation, right? I saw Worley pitched out of the pen yesterday.
Yeah, they're about done with Worley.
Adam Jones was robbed of a home run by Seth Smith. Devin Travis was out again. Jose Reyes, rehab assignment tomorrow. Jake Lamb could be back June 1st. AJ Pollock hit a game-winning home run at Miami, but he did it off the bench. Kind of annoying. And the Dodgers apparently could trade an infielder for a starting pitcher.
That's the least surprising rumor possible.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. And Andrelton Simmons batted seventh yesterday. That was the first time Simmons has batted seventh since May 1st.
I have one thing that I've been asked a couple times. Would you rather have Yan Gomes or Evan Gattis?
Oh, come on.
I've had a couple people ask it. They're trying to figure out if they should.
Gattis, right?
Gattis, I mean, slow start is enough of a concern.
Evan Gattis, look, I don't think Yan Gomes is a bad fantasy option by any stretch, but as good as he is as a power hitter, I think Gattis is going to exceed him by 10 plus home runs when all is said and done. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, definitely Gattis. I'm sure you'd say the same thing.
Oh, yeah. No, that's absolutely, but I've had enough people bring that specific comparison up. I guess Gattis is struggling in their starting lineup and Gomes is available on waivers that they're trying to figure it out. So I figured I'd bring it up.
You know, it was funny when during draft season or specifically auction, when we were doing auctions, Gattis was one of my favorite breakouts coming into this year, getting full-time at bats. And I really went hard after him in every auction, but Chris went even harder.
Yeah, so I really liked him in that situation, and it's been frustrating.
It was the two of us going back and forth for like $5, and then I eventually he won the game of chicken.
But I believe.
I'm gonna give
can
you.
Can I circle back to that Diamondbacks news for?
No. Yeah. No? Yes. Okay. Yes.
Jake Lamb looking like he's what, a week away, a little more.
June 1st.
Yeah, and you mentioned it's annoying AJ Pollock wasn't in the lineup last night. I think the combination of those two factors is reason enough not to care about Yasmani Tomas right now, even though he seems to be hitting pretty well, which I think is kind of misleading, first off, because there's not a lot of power. You look at his week-by-week point production for as much as he's been playing, really underwhelming. But I just don't think there's going to be much opportunity for him when Lamb gets back.
How can such a mediocre team have too many pieces to put into the starting lineup? It's frustrating.
They're mostly mediocre because of their pitching staff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, they should make a trade.
Can't win without pitching. They got a lot of good pitching prospects. I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be buried forever. I mean, this year, but you know, next two or three years.
We're going to wrap up the show quickly here. We'll do DFS in a second. And remember, watch Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. Eastern Time tonight, every weeknight on CBSSports.com. Give me your top three from the pitchers that we saw yesterday. Harang, Taijuan Walker, Jimmy Nelson. Good call by Al, liking Jimmy Nelson in DFS yesterday. Mm-hmm. Miguel Gonzalez, Hector Santiago, Nate Eovaldi, Carlos Frias, Aaron Sanchez, Mike Fultonevich, Wade Miley. Top three.
Well, Nelson's number one, far and away. And ownership, his ownership percentage is ridiculously low. Below Taijuan Walker still, what the heck? after that, if it's a points league, I'm going to go Frias for the relief pitcher eligibility. And then it's probably where you get into Harangville. And if it was Roto, I guess I'd go Harang second and Walker third. Yeah.
I can't put Harang over Walker. I know the results are better, but I can't bring myself
to
do
it. Well, what's your top three? What's your top three, Chris?
Nelson, Walker, Santiago.
Okay. FanDuel. Let's talk about it here.
Okay.
Whoa. Man, there are some bad pitchers going tonight.
That was the same thing last night.
Yeah,
last night was the most frustrating night putting together a FanDuel lineup for me because there were like 14 pitchers to stack against.
And I know.
Not even including like Hector Santiago or John Neese. And you're telling me it's worse tonight. I think Heath said the same thing.
Yeah.
So like how'd you decide between those hitters?
Phil Klein is pitching tonight at Boston. You've got Jason Marquis versus Jeremy Guthrie in the Cincinnati-Kansas City game. I'm just going to look up the all the pitchers. But if you guys could open up FanDuel and let me know which pitcher you like, if you could possibly make a case against Tyson Ross. I think it is so clear-cut that you have to go with Tyson Ross today. I know he's the second most expensive pitcher, but he's not outrageously priced, and he's facing the Cubs. And James Shields, where he struck out 11 guys last night, and he's been a good strikeout pitcher, but...
Yeah,
Cubs strike out all the time.
Ross hasn't been that great this year. I think he's better than he's been, but you know the Cubs. He walks guys, and the Cubs lineup is certainly capable of a high scoring game. So, but I get what you're saying too, because the alternatives are not exciting.
No, Chase Anderson and David Phelps were a couple of guys that if you want to go cheap, but. I don't know.
I can see the argument for Phelps. He's been doing really well.
I'm thinking Jake Odorizzi might be the
safe guy. That's the one that I was seeing.
But he's not that. Isn't he just under Tyson Ross?
Yeah, 100 less. He's not a cheap guy. I'm just talking safe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're wanting to avoid the potential implosion, the implosion potential that the Cubs present any less than ace pitcher, I feel like. it'll be a tough call between Ross and Odorizzi for my cash lineups.
And the thing is, when there are this many bad pitchers going, we're talking Severino Gonzalez and Eddie Butler at Colorado. Sean Markham is pitching tonight for Cleveland at the White Sox. You've got, a struggling Carlos Martinez and Bartolo Colon. I'm not sure I'd pick that matchup. Williams Perez facing the Rays for the Braves. You've got Drew Hutchison and Jared Weaver. Jared Weaver at Toronto. I'm going to avoid it just because Weaver has been good the last two times, but I could see Toronto having a big day, although Bautista has very bad numbers against Weaver in his career. You got Mike Pelfrey, who just came off one bad start, and quite frankly, I think he has more regressing to do. I wouldn't be surprised if the Pirates knocked him around. I wouldn't be surprised if the Tigers knocked around Jeff Locke. So I think what I learned from yesterday, because I think I had Trout in my lineup, is when there are this many bad pitchers going, I'm probably going to go expensive on pitcher, and I can find a lot of bargains at hitter. And for example, I will tell you what my lineup is. We can end it on this. I know we have to get off the air early on Wednesdays. Sorry.
Let me just ask one thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Besides Lucas Duda, are there any left-handed bats in the Mets lineup that you're really worried about?
What do you mean worried
That's the biggest thing with Carlos Martinez.
That's a good point.
Where he can't really get lefties out, but the Mets have struggled against righties. They have a 653 team OPS against right-handed pitchers against like a 740 against lefties. So he's a guy who has huge platoon splits, and Duda looming is a big one because he could really do some damage against Carlos Martinez and really undo everything. But
I like
he's
Curtis
got
Granderson too.
Right.
Granderson's been hitting the ball with power lately.
And he'll take a walk.
But I think if you could get past, it's really Duda. Like Granderson is fine, but I don't think he's someone that really concerns you.
So you're saying you would take a shot on Carlos Martinez? Perhaps?
I think he's someone who has some boom or bust potential. And I think he's someone that, because he's struggled so much lately, people might go away from him. So he could be a contrarian play against a team that hasn't hit right-handed pitchers so that well this season.
All right, my lineup is Tyson Ross and then mostly cheap infield with an expensive outfield. Wilson Ramos is only 2,900. I think he has a 19-game hitting streak. He homered yesterday. David Ortiz is 2,900. He might be heating up. And he's facing Phil Klein.
Oh, he's definitely heating up.
Yeah. Dustin Pedroia is 2,700. This one I don't understand at all. This is a very underpriced guy. Mike Moustakas is 2,600. He's facing a righty. He's facing Jason Marquis. I feel very good about it. And that might be the most undervalued player right now in FanDuel.
A lot of Royals are cheap and a lot of Red Sox are cheap. The Red Sox were my top stack yesterday just because of how cheap they are right now.
Mm-hmm. Jung Ho Kang I have at shortstop. There are some options around him in that price range. I'm not sure. I like that one. He's facing Pelfrey. Andrew McCutchen, Charlie Blackmon at home against a righty Severino Gonzalez. And then this one was kind of tough. Nelson Cruz, $4,500, has bad numbers against Wei-Yin Chen, I believe. Or if it wasn't that, it was that Chen is actually just having a really good year.
Allow me to say something very obvious.
All right, we got 1 minute. Buster Posey? Okay.
He's not someone we think of as a guy with huge platoon splits. He's the most expensive catcher in the game. I get that. It's obvious. But 959 career OPS against left-handed pitchers. Brett Anderson's not that good. I think he's a guy who's a must-play against left-handed pitchers in FanDuel.
Okay. And that's going to do it for us. Chris Tower, Scott White. Thanks, dudes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Adam.
Yeah, no problem, Al.
You're welcome, Scott.
I'm Adam Azer.
I almost called Ryan Bass Adam on the live
show. Oh, what an insult that would have been. All right, now we're out of here. Thanks, everybody. See you later.